It is Your Money. It is Sunday. I'm Susie Jones, and we're happy to have with us on the air this hour Bruce Helmer, the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group, and Senior Vice President Peg Webb, both of them financial advisors. And welcome back to Peg. Peg, hopefully you had a good time off last Sunday. We missed you, but we were able to carry on.
Yes. Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce. Of course you guys carried on without me.
Bruce, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Susie Jones. And yes, welcome back, Peg Webb. And I mean this sincerely, Peg. The show is definitely always better with you here. Susie and I did the best we could without you, but you are missed when you are gone. And Peg, today we have what we call one of our open line shows, or ask Peg and Bruce anything. That usually means Peg will know the right answer, and I'll defer to you and maybe chime in something of value once in a while, maybe not. But Peg, is there anything on your mind, anything you're hearing from clients, friends on the golf course, anything that seems to be a recurring theme that you want to proactively bring out before we get listeners involved?
Well, I definitely have been talking to people about this market. I mean, there's so many questions about, can this possibly continue? So we, all the way back to April, we were all afraid, right? Because the S&P was down 13.7%. Not only did we make that up, but as of Friday, we're positive 16.3%. And I think a lot of that has to do with AI, you know, the tech companies are certainly a big player in a lot of that percentage that's doing well. But then we also have this government shutdown that seems to be getting closer and closer to the longest on record. And so people are starting to get a little concerned about that. But corporate earnings are still coming in better than expected. So these impressive gains, Wealth Enhancement Group, they do what's called a seven market movers every week. And if you have not heard of that, you should go to our website, wealthenhancement.com, and under resources, you could see weekly what our company thinks is going to happen. But the markets just continue to make these impressive gains, and people remain optimistic, and they do believe that this shutdown is going to stop at one point. And I don't know, everybody's just optimistic, Bruce.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little surprised. I mean, I'm pleased that the market is doing so well. But when you look at some of the variables like the government shutdown, like the potential impact of the tariffs, the ongoing conflict, although, you know, supposedly there was a ceasefire, but it didn't hold in Gaza, the war still raging in Ukraine, there's a lot of reasons why people might think there's got to be a market correction or a retraction, right? But it just hasn't happened. And Peg, the other thing I'm hearing about is that there's an AI, you mentioned AI, that there's an AI bubble, and this bubble's going to burst and cause a market crash. I don't believe that. I don't see that at all. I've seen comparisons, you know, to the SNL crisis of several decades ago, or even the 2008 Wall Street iffy products based on bad debts, bad mortgages, and decreasing real estate values, the crash of 2008. I don't see anything that's similar to that or that compares to that. In fact, I still think AI, we're just scratching the surface of where it's going to go. I don't see a bubble ready to burst. I'm not saying there can't be a market retraction, but all this talk about a crash because of an AI bubble burst, I just think is somebody trying to scare people and sell them something. I don't buy it. I don't see it. Peg?
No, the highlight, definitely the highlights are that there are a lot of corporate profits, and it's just going robust. And this AI boom, I mean, personally, I can't keep up with all the changes. And I signed up recently for a class to try to get Wealth Enhancement Group, of course, is helping us, but to get very knowledgeable about what resources we can have. Now, last week, two-thirds of the S&P 500 were reported, and the vast majority of the companies delivered stronger than expected earnings. a big part of that is AI, but I believe it's going to be not just tech companies. It's going to trickle down to all sorts of businesses and create efficiencies, et cetera. Bruce?
And like most things in life, it's, you know, it's not all one-sided. There's two sides of the coin, good and bad. We're reading stories about Amazon laying people off, Target Corporation laying people off, and some of that is because of AI and enhanced efficiencies and needing less people. But what I, again, what people in the know economically are telling me, there'll be different opportunities for new jobs in this new economy, in this new world, with this new technology, if people can go, you know, get some education, get retrained. But, you know, obviously you never like to see layoffs and like to see people losing their jobs. But, you know, again, there's two sides to everything. You're enhancing efficiency, but you need less people, and so people are losing their jobs, and I'm very sympathetic to that. And the other thing, Peg, I wanted to mention, I had a question during the week, and the bigger issue to me was, I think sometimes you and I talk in general terms. We talk about the robust economy, corporate profits, the great stock market, and we're talking in the macro. There's always, you know, pockets of the economy that aren't doing well. There's always people that are struggling. I know there's people out there that lost their job or they're living paycheck to paycheck. And I never want to appear to be insensitive to that. So when we're talking in broad, very general terms, but we're not naive to the fact and we're not insensitive to the fact that not everybody's doing great. Some people can't contribute to this robust stock market. They don't have any excess cash flow or they don't have a job. So again, we know those people are out there and we care about you. And we don't mean to be insensitive when we talk about all these good things that we see in the economy, but we're talking about the big picture macroeconomically. And then anything else, Peg, that you wanted to bring up? I had one thing before we go to questions, but I wanted to give you another chance.
No, go ahead, Bruce.
Well, I wanted to bring up health savings accounts. It wasn't necessarily that I had a question on it, although I have been doing my fall speaking activities, and I have had this come up at some of my presentations. Not as much of a lack of understanding, but I would say a lack of utilization. So if you would, Peg, talk a little bit about why we are so bullish on using health savings accounts. Who can use them? Who can't use them? If you're eligible, why we think you should use them? Because, again, in my experience, a lot of people that could be using them either aren't using them at all or aren't using them to the extent that they could be. So you want to talk a little bit about an HSA?
Oh, I'd love to. I absolutely love these health savings accounts because what happens is you take dollars that you have and you put it into an account, and it grows tax-free for your benefits. And it also, if you're gainfully employed by a company, you can take that money and not get taxed on it, you know, upfront. And then if you follow the rules, you can take the money out for healthcare expenses on the back end. But you have to have a high deductible plan. And we used to be very familiar, Bruce, with what was called a traditional healthcare plan. You know, high deductibles just mean, you know, you have less maybe out of pocket on a monthly basis, but you're putting money into an account like a high deductible plan so that you can use that money along the way. Well, you don't even have to work for somebody. Not every company has a HSA that's offered. But if you have a high deductible plan, you can actually go to a bank or you can go to a financial institution and just open up your own high deductible plan. I feel like there's a lot of confusion around that. And so I talked about these tax advantages, but there's really triple tax advantages: deductible contributions, tax-deferred growth, and tax-free distributions. There's very, very few investments that you can make that you have triple tax distributions. Now, there's limits, right? So we can't just go and put $50,000 in a health savings account. There's annual contribution limits. And for 2025, if you were a couple, it was $8,750. catch-ups were 1,000 if you're 55 and older. So now you have to use these for medical needs, like doctor visits, dental, financial planning costs, hospital costs. But probably the least understood is there's some new legislation changes that came about, and probably the biggest one for the most people that are listening is your maximum contribution rule. If you become eligible for a health savings account on December 1st, you can make the maximum contribution for that entire year. So think about this. If you had to change a job and you're eligible, or you went to a high deductible plan on December 1st of 2025, you can go deposit $8,750 for your family. So there's some new things that are out there. The Affordable Care Act that we all know from long ago now is treated as a high deductible plan, where before just this recent change, they were not eligible to do these HSAs. So if you're not knowledgeable about them, and if you are employed, just make sure that you have the opportunity to put money in. Once again, triple tax advantages.
Peg, I have a question as you're talking. If a person has, I'm just kind of asking a personal question. If I have insurance and a 401k, why would I get an HSA if I'm already kind of covered with my own personal insurance, just to cover extra stuff? Like, what would the benefit? I know you're talking about taxes, so you're maybe saying everyone should have one just as a vehicle to not only for healthcare reasons, but for tax implications as well.
Well, for sure. Now, in your case, I don't know of a single employee that has 100% of their healthcare costs from their employer. Right.
Right.
So we all have these, minimums and maximums and things that we do. And my HSA, my personal one, and I said this a couple weeks on this show, it got to be huge because I was willing to do the stock market over time. And once you turn 65, you actually can start pulling that money out for reasons other than healthcare and expenses like that, but it would be taxable. So the way you get that money out at the end, qualified medical expenses. So anyone who's eligible for this should open up an account. And I am a big fan of this once again, because it's triple tax advantage.
Peg, that was so good. I actually learned a couple things from you that I didn't know, but I just want to emphasize again, the listeners, I think sometimes people, struggle with, okay, should I do traditional IRA where I get a deduction for the contribution and I defer the taxes at some point in the future when I withdraw the money? Or should I do a Roth where I don't get a deduction, but if I let it stay in there for 5 years or until age 59 and a half, whichever is longer, I don't pay any taxes on the gain? Well, the HSA gives you both. You get to have your cake and eat it too. You get a deduction for the contribution, and if that withdrawal is for qualifying medical expenses, and that's to your point, Susie, no plan covers everything. So if we pay out of our pocket and we have to satisfy a deductible before we're eligible for benefits, we can use the HSA where we got a deduction for the contribution and now get tax-free withdrawals to pay for those expenses. Mm-hmm. And the one thing we didn't say, Peg, which I think is huge, and I think this applies to both of us, because I think we both use our HSA as right now kind of as an accumulation vehicle, and we haven't been using it to pay for stuff. I just pay for stuff out of pocket, and I'm kind of using the HSA, or assuming I'll use it someday in the future, for what I call the big ticket item when I have to go get hip replacement or knee replacement or something like that. But if you never use the HSA and you pay for a lot of stuff out of your own pocket, if you document that, you can reimburse yourself for those expenses tax-free with a tax-free withdrawal, as long as you can document those expenses. And I've said on the show before, most people probably use a computer program. I have a manila file folder with every receipt stuck in there, so that someday I'll withdraw from my HSA to reimburse myself for those costs if I don't use it to pay for my hip replacement. So it's such a consumer-friendly vehicle, and a lot of people aren't participating, like I said, or aren't doing it to the extent that they can. Mm. All right, Susie, let's plug the number and let's get the listeners involved with questions or texts, whatever. We'll let listeners take it from here.
Okay, well, I will say the number again, but I have a quick follow-up from a listener right now on HSAs. The phone number, if you're listening and you have a question about your money, whether it's an HSA or a Roth or whatever, 401k, 651-461-9226. You can use that number to call us here. We'd love to have you on the air. 651-461-9226. You can text or call us. This texter writes, Bruce and Peg, regarding an HSA, if you have signed up for Medicare, can you do an HSA if you are taking Medicare? And this person says, I have to do a VEBA at work. Not sure what that is.
So, Peg, I'm not so. There's a couple different things on this question. VEBA is a term I have not heard in a lot of years, and I hope you remember what it is because I'm not sure I do. And then a good question. You're 65. You're on Medicare. How or does that impact your ability to contribute to an HSA?
Well, that's easy. You can't contribute. Okay. So if you are on Medicare, you cannot contribute any longer. But you still have this pot of money that you can use for past costs of healthcare, your healthcare. The other one I didn't mention was long-term care. I have clients that are sending out $6,000-$7,000 a month, and they're able to use this HSA. So I'm kind of in the back of my mind thinking that, and why I'm letting mine grow tax-free is because I just feel like, once again, my story of my grandmother who went into a nursing home for years, I feel like that would be a good bucket of money. And I do have long-term care insurance, but it doesn't pay for everything. So in my mind, I'm holding that for my long-term kind of insurance that I parked in this health savings account.
And I'll just use myself as a personal example here. I am over the age of 65, but I did not go on to Medicare yet. I still have my company insurance. So even though I'm over 65, I can still contribute to my HSA. And one of the reasons I didn't sign up for Medicare yet, that is one of them, because I wanted to keep funding my HSA. Now, I have other reasons.
So, Bruce, you don't have to automatically sign up? You're not required?
Nope.
I guess I
and
didn't
so there's
know
reasons. There's reasons, you know, if you're somebody that's 65 or older, you can actually, Susie, do a comparison. Are you better off taking Medicare, or are you better off staying on your company insurance? And you can do a cost-benefit analysis and say what is covered, what is not, versus each road I take, and what is the cost. And if you can't do that yourself, a financial professional can help you. But for me, it was several reasons. Contributing to my HSA was one of them. But the other thing for me is my wife, Pamela, several years younger than I am. She's not 65 yet. She's not eligible for Medicare. So if I went on Medicare, that would be problematic in terms of she is on my company plan for her insurance. So maybe when she gets to be 65, we'll have to look at the issue again and at that time decide whether I stay on the company plan or whether I take Medicare. But at this point, it makes more sense for me to not. So it's not driven just by age of 65. It's driven by are you on Medicare or not?
Okay.
And then, Peg, I don't want to just ignore the texter's question, but I don't know the answer. Do you remember what a VEBA is?
No.
Okay.
We'll look that up. We'll have to look that one up.
Hey, we have Jeff is on the news line this morning from Lionel Lakes with a question for you guys as we talk. Open phones. You can ask him anything, Jeff. Good morning. How are you? Go ahead. Ask the question away.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the call. My question is there an amount that's too much to put in an HSA? Meaning I'm probably like 5 years from retirement, probably have close to six figures in the HSA, and should I just keep on funding it until I retire, or should I divert that money somewhere else?
Peg?
Well, I kind of have the same problem where I kind of wonder if I should be using it, but I've got that big folder that Bruce has too with all these medical bills that I can literally like mail in one day and say, give me my money. So for sure do that. Hopefully you've held all those receipts and put them in the folder like Bruce and I did. And then, you know, if you leave your HSA, I kind of talked about this a couple weeks ago too, where if you leave it to your kids, but then it's going to be taxable. So you wouldn't want to do that either, Bruce.
Yeah, and again, the worst thing, Jeff, unless there's that can happen, you still get a deduction for your contribution, right? Just like a traditional IRA. So if you do end up paying taxes on it, or your kids do, that's not the desired result, but that's not the worst thing in the world either, and that's the worst thing that can happen. So I like the idea of continuing to fund it as long as it's not detracting from your lifestyle. You're giving up something else in order to fund your HSA. And you never know. You mean, Jeff, you don't know what the future holds. You don't know if you're going to need hip replacements and knee replacements. And you might end up spending all that money. And if you don't and you pay some taxes, that's not the worst thing in the world either. So I still like the idea of funding it. I know I'm still funding mine. And I think Peg and I are kind of in the same boat you are. Susie, I know we're due for a break, but second half of the show, all listeners all the time.
All right, let's do it. 651-461-9226. Thanks, Jeff, for calling from Lionel Lakes. And if you're in the mood, give us a call as well. We'd love to have your question on the air. 651-461-9226. You can also text it. We've got a number of text questions coming up in the second half of Your Money. 651-461-9226. All right, it is Your Money. It is the second half of Your Money. The phone number to call is 651-461-9226. You can text that line or call it. We appreciate either. If you have a question for Bruce or Peg, it is Your Money. It is Wealth Enhancements, Your Money. And we're happy to have you with us and happy to have back Bruce Helmer, the founder, and Peg Webb, Senior Vice President, both of which are qualified and very good financial advisors. Welcome back to both of you. If you want to say anything before we get started, but we have a number of questions. As it is, ask Bruce and Peg anything.
Thank you, Susie Jones. Thank you, listeners. Peg, someone in the first half asked a question, part of which included the term VEBA, and you and I couldn't remember what it was. And in our defense, I haven't run across one of these in years. I feel like we used to see them more often. I think they're relatively uncommon, but I cheated during the break and I looked it up. So a VEBA, V-E-B-A is an acronym for Voluntary Employees Beneficial Association. It's a type of plan set up to help employees pay for certain benefits, often or usually medical expenses. It's created under IRS Section 501c9. It's essentially a special savings account for employee benefits funded by employers, unions, or the employees themselves. And it sounds a lot, you know, like what we just described with an HSA, in that the withdrawals can be tax-free if you meet certain requirements, and the funding can be tax-deferred. So, again, a VEBA plan, I think they're uncommon, and I think I see them, or I think they're less prevalent than they used to be, and I'm not sure why that is. But, Peg, I feel like I used to bump into them, you know, several times a year, and I know at this point, until the texter asked the question, it's probably been at least 5 years since it's ever, it's for me that it's even come up. Peg?
I would agree. I do remember HRA, and I just couldn't remember why, because I don't see it anymore. I just don't.
All right, Susie, let's let listeners take the rest of the way.
All right, here we go. 651-461-9226. I contribute to an HSA. My employer allows me to provide health insurance to my significant other. We are not married. Can we use HSA funds for medical expenses? Can we both use it out of that?
Oh, what a good question. So, Peg, again, I got to admit, I don't know. So, if you have a partner, but it's not your spouse, and you want to take a withdrawal for healthcare expenses, can you get tax-free withdrawals to use that for your partner's expenses?
I don't know.
All right. We'll look it up and bring it back next week, huh? couple.
Well, I don't know. If anything, that would be a recent change, I believe.
Okay. One question that people are asking as well about funding an HSA when you're past 65 and wondering if that's actually, you can still do that.
Peg, my understanding is as long as you haven't filed for Medicare benefits, you still can. I hope you can. Otherwise, I'm breaking the law because I'm sure I'm still funding.
I'm breaking the law too, Bruce. I would be. No. So what? So if you're gainfully employed, you can still do an HSA. And but it's all about being on Medicare. That would change that.
Okay. So that's the caveat there. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Very good. Let's say, mention, please, if you would, that you can use traditional IRA money to fund an HSA once in your lifetime. Is that true? So I could take money from my 401k or IRA to fund an HSA? Move money?
Peg, I don't remember how that works. So the funding using some other type of tax advantage plan like an IRA, I have stuff in my brain, but I don't have clarity. Do you remember how that works?
Yeah, so tell me again, what's the scenario?
The scenario is, please mention that you can use the traditional IRA money to fund an HSA once in your lifetime.
I do know of that rule. I just can't quote the details about it.
Okay. Well, maybe we can come back to that next week as well. We have a phone call.
Hey Susie, before we go to the call, I cheated and I looked it up. The question about taking a withdrawal from your HSA for a non-spouse partner and getting tax-free treatment, there's complexities, but the short answer is no. Generally speaking, that's not allowed, and there might be an exception, but I'm looking at a fairly lengthy answer here, but the short answer is no.
All right, very good. 651-461-9226. Tom is calling today from Prescott, Wisconsin. Tom, thanks for calling in. Appreciate your question here today.
Thank you, Miss. My question has to do with enterprise zones. I've been told that if you sell a income property that you have that has been depreciated down to essentially zero, if you took the proceeds and invested it in what's called an enterprise zone, that you essentially would avoid the capital gain tax on it if you kept it in there for a period of 5 years, and you could earn around 6% annually on that amount tax-free. Have you ever heard of that? It's something that I'm interested in.
Hey, Tom, thanks for listening and thanks for the question. So, Peg, an enterprise zone, I do know, it's like a geographic special area. It's often identified either by state or local government where businesses can receive tax breaks or regulatory relief for locating there. The way Tom described it, it's usually, in my experience, like a private deal that somebody might do. But I'm wondering, Peg, if we don't sometimes have enterprise zones in some of our managed portfolios. Well, I mean, what would you add to Tom's question and my very 10,000-foot answer?
Well, as you know, we get questions all week long, and I this is another one where I've not ran into this recently for a long time, so I can't help you.
All right.
Tom, I've run into them. I've even looked. I know I read a private placement memorandum on behalf of a client once that was considering investing in one. And I think, and I could be wrong, I think Wealth Enhancement might use them in portfolios. But I think what you said is true as far as it goes. But the devil's always in the details, right? So there can be definitely tax advantage. But it also could be marketed to sound maybe better than it is. If you read a private placement memorandum on it, it should include the risk factors that you need to be aware of. So I wouldn't tell anybody not to do it, but I would just say proceed cautiously and make sure you consider all the possibilities. But so, Peg, for me, it's a little bit like cryptocurrency. I know a little about it, but not enough where I feel comfortable advising. But I always tell people, whether it's an enterprise zone or any kind of a private deal, you know, don't do anything without documentation. And if you have documentation, I'll read it for you and give you my opinion. And I know I've read one, at least one before on enterprise zones. Susie?
651-461-9226. Todd is calling today, I believe, from Ramsey. Am I correct in that? I'm reading Ryan's perfect scribble. Todd, go ahead. You're on the air with Bruce and Peg. What's your question?
Ryan's perfectly right. My father-in-law had a company, and he gifted stock in that company to his children, my wife. It's a sub-S corporation. The old cliche about what happens in companies when the next generation takes over was true in this case. The company is on the verge of closing its doors. During the course of the years where the company was doing well, we bought Sub-S Corporation stock from other members of the family that had been gifted it and wanted to sell it. When the company fails and closes its doors, are there tax deductions available for those stock that was purchased over the years, not gifted?
Hey, Todd, thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. I know a little bit about this, Peg. I'll let you go first. But basically what Todd's asking is, this was not a publicly traded company. And like any investment, if you can verify a loss on the investment, that loss is deductible. But it gets tricky here because it's not publicly traded. And there's been some gifting and some granting and whatnot. So for Todd, how do you know what your basis is, and how do you determine what the loss is that you're even able to deduct? That's where it gets tricky, Peg.
Yeah, and I believe, and this is a tax question, and hopefully you talk to a business tax person, and we have them at Wealth Enhancement Group in our roundtable as we're getting these great questions today. But there has to be a valuation of that S-corp along the way, right? And I gotta believe that there's even the stock that was gifted and the stock that you purchased from the other siblings has to have somewhat of a stated value. And if it's going to be worthless, I mean, I've got to believe that there's going to be some type of write-off, but you would have to contact the CPA. Maybe you had CPA for that business, and or go to a financial advisory who does detailed taxes like we do and get help. Bruce?
Yeah, and there can be a lot of different tranches at a lot of different values. If the company was flourishing at one time, the share price was probably a lot higher at that time, and then the share price probably went down over time as the company struggled until it ultimately became worthless. So the 10,000-foot answer, Todd and listeners, is I'm sure you can deduct losses, but I think you're going to have a heck of a tough time figuring out exactly what your basis is and what your loss is. And Peg, man, we're getting tough questions today. That's the
yeah, we are.
Yeah, you are. Yeah. You're being put to the test.
I'm quite calm because we have this round table behind us that we can count on. Not live, but we can go to them and get more detail.
Sure, sure. Texter writes at 651-461-9226. Half of my HSA value is in investments with HSA company and other half is in a balance I use to reimburse self for out-of-pocket costs. Is this a good idea to split the value?
Oh, wow. That's a good question, and that's one we can handle. So, Peg, one of the things we didn't talk about when we talked about HSAs at length in the first half of the show, and it's a question I do get frequently. Okay, I took your advice. I set up this HSA. I'm putting all this money into it. Now, what do I do with it? Do I put it in stocks? Do I put it in funds? Do I put it in the stock market, bond market? Do I put it in the money market with no risk of principal? What do I do with it once I open this up? What's the appropriate way for me to invest within my HSA?
Yes. So the problem with that is you actually have a choice, right? I've had my health savings account in kind of a special category, And that special category is because I really understand triple tax savings. Like, I just see it as the best thing that's ever happened. And so during my younger years, I went 100% for the stock market, and I've never asked them to send me any money. And I've got this folder of all these receipts of healthcare costs, knowing that I can go there one day and get all my money. Well, as I've got older, I have been easing back 20% here, 20% here, 20%, to the point where I'm only in 20% of the stock market right now, because I just see that as such a precious account. And if I'm going to be aggressive, that isn't one that I'm going to remain aggressive in. I've got other money that I could be super aggressive. So that's my personal feeling about these health savings accounts, because they're so rare and so precious with that tax savings. Bruce?
Yeah, and the texter asked, I have half of it exposed to stocks or equities or invested more aggressively, and half of it conservative. And I think that's fine. You've got money that if you want to use your HSA to pay for things in the short term, you've got a choice, right? If you don't want to sell stocks, you can take it out of the safe portion of the HSA. Or if you said, hey, the stock market's at an all-time high, it's a great time actually to take it out of the equity side and lock in my embedded gains in there. But it's nice to have a choice. So the question is this appropriate or is this a good idea? I absolutely think it is. I like what you're doing.
All right, 651-461-9226. If you want to call and ask your question, and again, it's Ask Bruce and Peg Anything. It's a great opportunity for you to get your financial questions asked. This texter writes, if I retire and stay on my health plan, do I have to go on Medicare or can I stay on my workers' plan? That's a little different than we talked about before in terms of making that choice between staying on an employer's health care plan or switching over to Medicaid. Do you know that answer to that?
Yeah, so this is unusual, but I think it's possible, Peg. I think some companies extend their health insurance benefit to their employees even after they retire or they're no longer employees. Now, I don't think it happens a lot, and I don't think it's in perpetuity. Maybe it is, but I was going to say I don't think it's forever or in perpetuity. I think there might be a time frame where that ends, but if the company actually extends that benefit, you're eligible to do that, and you don't have to go on Medicare. But Peg, I don't think they'll do it forever, will they?
No, usually it's 18 months that they will allow you to carry on with the health insurance, but it's expensive. So the company isn't going to pay like they're paying you your half or whatever they're contributing. They're not going to do that anymore. So you have to weigh the pros and cons of what Medicare would cost and then what this 18 months worth of health insurance would cost.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Susie, just to add to that. Earlier in the show, Susie and Peg, we talked about you can do an analysis or a comparison of going on to Medicare versus your own company insurance and figure out, you know, what's covered, what's not, what's cost, and so on. But I think you have to also assume that if you go on to Medicare, that to get the kind of coverage that you get through your employer, you're going to have to purchase, you know, and it's not mandatory, it's optional, but you're probably going to want to purchase some sort of Medicare supplement plan to cover things that Medicare doesn't. And so for most people, Peg has talked about this a lot, they do the happy dance when they turn 65, because their Medicare and their Medicare supplement or their coverage under Medicare is better and cheaper than what they've ever had before. But in some cases, that's not true. In some cases, your own personal corporate plan might cover you better and or might be more cost effective, but probably not, like Peg said, after you retire and you no longer work there. Susie?
We have another caller. We're kind of all over the board today. I like it. We have Brian from Mankato calling on the air with a question for Bruce and Peg. Go ahead, Brian. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I'm 41 years old, single. Should I do a HSA or an FSA, and what's the difference?
Hey, Brian, thank you for listening, and thanks for your question. Did he say FFA?
Flexible spending account, FFA.
Oh, FFA, okay.
Yeah. Oh, so would you want me to answer? So
I don't know the answer, so you better.
we know that we talked about health savings accounts here in length, but FSA, flexible spending account, is offered by your employer, owned by the employee. I'm reading this off of this because I don't run into these a lot. Contribution limits. Lower limits than a HSA set by the IRS. So I just don't see that many of those.
Okay, yeah, good. Well, but I was kind of swaying towards HSA anyway, so.
You would encourage him.
The fact that you can put more money into it, I think that's why the HSA is so much more popular.
Yeah, I think Brian and listeners, if there's a choice, I think I would say the health savings account is the right choice. Peg, I'm surprised that Brian has a chance to do either, because I think most companies either do one or the other, not both. But if you have a choice of both, I don't think there's anything, to my knowledge, any opportunity, any plan of this type that is superior to the health savings account.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks calling.
Brian.
So we've been in Wisconsin, Mankato, Lionel Lakes. We're all around the board today. We have this text question coming in. What are your thoughts on high dividend exchange traded funds? Do you like them more than others?
Peg, ETFs, high dividend ETFs. And I think we've only got about a minute, right?
Right.
Peg?
Yeah, so ETFs, exchange traded funds, are just a different type of mutual fund. It is the reason that people like it is because of the lack of taxation. What they do is they put the dividend stocks in a basket, if you will. Then they put kind of cement walls around it. And as long as they're trading in it, in that box, you're not going to get a 1099 at the end of the year for trades. If you sell some of the shares, then yes, you will get some gains or losses based on that. But that's why they're very popular today, is that taxation saving. Bruce?
Yeah, and really quickly, ETFs are comparatively new as compared to traditional mutual funds, but they are growing in popularity. I think that's going to continue to happen. We're using them more and more. The only disadvantage right now is a lot of ETFs don't have as long of a track record that we can look at. But they're growing in popularity, whether it's high dividend or whatever it is. We like ETFs. We use them a lot. And, Susie, I know you're about to give us the hook.
Give you the hook. The hammer's coming down. Hey, thanks, Bruce and Peg, and thanks to all our listeners. We had a lot of great involvement today. Good questions. We appreciate that. And if you have a question you did not get answered, you can call 1-888-6-ADVICE. I'll say it again, 1-888-6-ADVICE. And you can call and make an appointment for a free consultation, and always email your questions to yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great week.